This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. We've talked so much over the past couple of years about the ways in which gerrymandering has affected our political processes, deepening partisan divides. In recent weeks, the independent commission voters approved to do Michigan's next round of legislative redistricting has hit some speed bumps. They have to do with the timing of its work and funding. As we talk more about what's going on with the commission, it might be helpful to remember how Michigan got the representation we have today and why some think it should be different. Here to jog our collective memory is longtime Lansing political reporter, now retired from his role as publisher of Gongwer News Service. It's John Lindstrom. John, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So if we imagine what redistricting used to look like, I'm going to paint a picture of lawmakers sitting as they would in any other legislative committee, maps of the state flanking the dais, and a stream of high-powered Congress members testifying, pleading the case for the district lines that they feel should be drawn. Am I getting warmer here? Is this close to it?
Oh, the dreams of youth. no, it. The thing about redistricting, not just in Michigan, but nationwide, for a long time was tied as much to land as it was to the number of people that lived in an area. All four of Michigan's constitutions, going back to 1835, make a specific reference to how you apportion on the basis of county boundaries or local boundaries. So the last constitution that was developed in this state, the 1963 constitution, it went swimmingly. That was probably the least contentious constitutional convention of any constitutional convention in the history of this country. Even things like the ban on the death penalty got tossed up, and almost everyone voted for it, Democrats and Republicans, until they came to the issue of redistricting. And then it all fell apart. And that was because the Democrats wanted a one-man, one-vote situation, and the Republicans wanted a situation that would still involve a formula that looked at, for one thing, land, territory, boundaries, and population.
And well, why can you unpack why land would have been important to the Republicans making this argument at the time?
All I can think of is that the idea was that you wanted to make sure that people were represented from their areas, which makes sense in large measure. And actually, to a degree, we still have a provision for considering boundaries, even in the 2018 proposal that voters, not politicians, passed. There is a requirement that they still look at as much as possible compactness and contiguous lines, which was part of the Bernie Apel standards that were enacted in the 1982 Supreme Court case in Michigan, which threw out the 1963 constitutional provisions. In 1963, what they did is they created a commission. They consisted of two Republicans and two Democrats, and they were supposed to come up with the lines. And you know, you had all kinds of wacky proposals. There was one chap I remember who came in quite serious with a proposal that every single representative and every single senator would represent a portion of the entire state. And he was going to do that by a demarcation line that started right at Woodward and Jefferson in Detroit, and then extended out big pie wedges all the way across the state, if you can imagine. Thank God they didn't enact that. But the Constitution, however, did not make a provision for one man, one vote. And that was a decision made by the U.S. Supreme Court, in which they said you have to look at actual populations, because otherwise, if you do it just on the basis of the territories, then you've debased the votes of various people. I mean, you could have an area that, say, has lost a lot of population and still would, say, be entitled to get two or three representatives, whereas an area that's gained a lot of population is only entitled to get one. And so that's inherently unfair. In effect, what we've been doing is going to a system that theoretically is more fair. Now, in 1982, the Supreme Court here in Michigan said the people can come up with a redistricting idea if they want to. Well, they didn't bother to get around to that for 36 years. And so that left it up to the legislature. And because for the last three recyclings, redistricting cycles, it has been largely a Republican-controlled state government. And so they were the ones crafting the lines. After the 2000 and 2010 censuses, it was all Republican-controlled, and it was pretty brutal. I mean, they made no secret of the fact of what they were going to do.
John, let's flash forward. Michigan's voters passed a ballot measure in 2018 that has mandated there will be this independent commission of citizens, not partisan people who do have a party affiliation, but not people who are directly connected or have served for their party. And they've asked that this be redone, as is happening right now, with the idea that communities of interest must be considered. In the language of representation, that's the work that's happening right now. In the language of representation, what are communities of interest?
Well, you think first of all to, okay, you know, protecting minority populations, but you can get into all kinds of different things. You know, are you talking about a specifically rural area, heavily agricultural? Are you talking about a specifically industrial area where you've got a lot of union workers? Are you talking about an area, for example, say, Oak Park, where you have a very heavy Jewish population, as well as a very heavy Muslim population, or Dearborn, where you have a very heavy Muslim population? I mean, to a certain degree, communities of interest, there's no real hard and fast definition of it at this point. And that will, in effect, come as these things are considered.
John, there was an article in the Free Press this week speculating that while the commission is an independent citizen commission, it might still be susceptible to lobbying. Having seen what you've seen, do you think that there is any way to take an aspect of lobbying in one form or another out of the redistricting process?
Well, it's interesting that piece said that, because I've been involved in some discussions with friends of mine, some of whom were very inactive with voters, not politicians, who have raised that as a major concern. And they are hopeful that commission members are being told, you know, watch yourself, you know, you go out all across the state and do these public hearings. Now, under COVID, it may be a little more difficult to do this. But if you're all sitting around at dinner, make sure nobody's actually picking up your dinner for you that you don't know about, or you know, make sure nobody's buying drinks for you or something like that. That's the concern that they have, is that you could see some subtle lobbying to try to influence how the maps will be drawn. And of course, that comes on top of the problem of not getting the full data probably in time for when the maps have to be created.
And, right. And just then you run into, for those who aren't up on this, the U.S. Census has announced that it's going to be delivering the data necessary for this work very late, like 30 days before the commission's supposed to be completely done.
Right. And you know, there is really no provision in the constitutional amendment to come up with another map if they get fresh data. There is, you know, obviously the Supreme Court could step in if need be. But there are a number of problematic situations here.
Do you think that there's still reason to be optimistic that the nonpartisan approach might have some traction, or it might have some kind of life in the future of Michigan politics?
Oh, yes, I think there is, because I think that's obviously what the majority of people wanted in voting for this. I mean, I was polled by Voters Not Politicians a year ago, and which was kind of surprised me, but okay. And one of the questions they asked, and this was one of the strangest questions I've ever been asked in a poll, was, if Voters Not Politicians was an animal, what kind of animal would it be? And I thought about it for a moment, and I said, a platypus. And they said, what? Why a platypus? I mean, I figured they'd I was going to say a French bulldog or something. and I said, well, you had no money, really, until close to the end on the campaign. You did it all on a citizen organization, which almost never happens these days. You didn't pay for petition signatures, which almost doesn't happen these days. You were able to put together a proposal that people agreed with, and you won a majority of the voters in this state. And not only a majority of all the voters, you want probably a majority of both parties. And that's just not supposed to happen. Well, here's a platypus. He's crawling on the ground. He's got duck feet, a duck bill. He lays eggs, and he has square poop. That animal isn't supposed to exist. And theoretically, neither are you. So.
John Lindstrom is a longtime journalist covering state capital politics, now retired. He was for many years the publisher of Gong War News Service. John, thank you so much for talking with us about this.
You're more than welcome.